Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of the Chinwag podcast. Today we're going to be talking about movie hero deaths, what makes a great hero death, and we're going to be talking through our examples of those. Today I'm joined with my fellow compadres, my fellow Chinwaggers. Solo, say hi to the people at home.
Hello and good evening, everyone.
And Sam Glyn Smith.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for listening.
Yeah. So, firstly, when we talk about hero deaths in films, what are the first things that spring to mind? Like, I mean, firstly, I guess you have to define what a hero is for a start. And
Well, I guess it's. It's funny with something like movies because there's a difference between like a hero character type and a movie hero. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, cause in theory, like the leading role in every film can be a movie hero. Mm. But to be like a hero and to have like one of these heroic deaths, you have to be one of those guys that put something on the line. Like there's got to be like, it, definitely within the character, and if it's gonna be good, it needs to be in the film. There has to be like a strong emotional arc that builds through the character to make them the hero, for these deaths to kind of have the sort of impact that, if you're gonna make a brilliant film, well, that has a death scene, it needs to be a banger.
Yeah, I had that. Sort of dilemma with Mufasa and thinking about his death. And I thought how he wasn't necessarily a hero, more of a plot device, you know, to push the hero on. It was the inciting incident sort of thing. So, So then you do have to think, well then what does define a hero in film? Thinking of Lion King, do you remember any early ones? Like, do you remember the first time you saw a hero death in a film? Mine might have been Mufasa, to be honest.
I'd probably say Mufasa, yeah.
Disney could deal with the parent deaths, didn't it?
I don't know. Yeah. Because I missed a lot of Disney when I was younger, so I can't actually remember what my first one would have been. It might even have been Star Wars.
Oh, man.
I think it'd be Obi-Wan.
Yeah.
I think that would probably be the first one I ever saw.
I would have probably been Qui-Gon for Star Wars. I think I saw the prequels before the. Well, not the prequels. I saw the sequel. Wait, no, they are the prequels.
Yeah, they are the prequels.
I saw the prequels before I saw the original trilogy. So yeah, it's probably Qui-Gon.
I did original trilogy first. Even at a young age, I had the reading list.
Fair. Yeah, I saw Star Wars won't have been my first, but definitely probably shaped what I think of movie deaths. But again, Obi-Wan's kind of like Mufasa in that sense.
But at the same time, like, I don't. It's like what we were saying before, I don't think we said it actually since we recorded, but like a hero death for me, well, what I constitute as a hero death is like someone that had to die for a particular purpose kind of thing. Whereas with Qui-Gon, he just dies, you know what I mean? He just loses. Same with Obi-Wan kind of thing. Like they don't serve, their death doesn't serve for a greater purpose. Like if someone dies in front of a bullet so that their partner can then kill the other person, then that to me is a hero's death, you know, because you had to make a sacrifice. Whereas maybe like Qui-Gon and stuff is just a death for me. I don't know. I guess that's how I kind of define it, though.
I hear you. I get what you mean about that.
Yeah.
Like otherwise, it's just a death, isn't it? Like as you say, Mufasa's like his. Isn't necessarily a hero's death because it's used as a device to push a story forward. Whereas
it very much has to push Simba out of his comfort zone.
Yeah. Like Thomas Wayne wasn't a hero's death.
Yeah. Qui-Gon, like, purely because, like, Obi-Wan through that whole film was like, don't get me wrong, he's getting there, but he's not quite the guy yet, you know. And I think his Qui-Gon's death is literally just to make room for a new Jedi Master, you know? Like,
Should we get to some of our suggestions then? And I think as we're talking about like multiple ones with Star Wars, maybe it's best we lead with yours, Sam, with Harry Potter.
Yeah, true. So I think before, especially considering it's been 5 years the other day since Alan Rickman died, rest in peace. Was had me thinking about Snape and how his death is somewhat of a hero's death to an extent, but just by that previous definition that we've just talked about, it's not, I guess. I mean, he is a hero, he's the double agent and whatnot, but he just dies from, you know what I mean? He dies for Voldemort to progress, kind of thing. He doesn't choose to die, he doesn't necessarily know he's about to die, kind of thing. He doesn't make that choice, you know. Like, he's just down in the lake house and it's too late, you know what I mean? He dies. But within that, you have got some notable death. Dobby, for an example, you know, goes to Malfoy Manor and ends up dying, saving Harry Potter and the rest of them. Like, that to me is like your classic hero death. You've got a lot of the others, to be fair, a lot of people just die in like open warfare, I guess. So they are.
Yeah, trust me.
They are heroes' deaths. Like Fred, Lupin, Tonks, you know, all of the characters really that die throughout. Even to be fair, Dumbledore's death is probably up for debate about a hero death because he knows he's going to die. You know, he's planned his whole death. Like,
yeah, but I kind of loved that though.
The only one thing we can guarantee in life is that we're gonna die. That's your one guarantee.
Yeah, true. And that Boris Johnson can't lead the country, but other than that,
well, he never has been, has he?
Yeah, no, fuck Boris.
See them strings.
Yeah, man. But yeah, so Harry Potter in general is. But then that's just that form of writing. I feel like you had a lot of people copying afterwards as well, with just, you know, building up characters just to kill them off, just to rip at your heartstrings, really. Mm-hmm. Harry Potter's one of them. There's so many characters in Harry Potter that, I mean, in the last book, there's so many deaths that you just kind of forget that everyone's dead, you know what I mean? We were saying before, as Rogan said, like, Hedwig is just, just an unnecessary death. What's the point, mate?
And he just kind of, like, goes as well, like he's a very like, oh, there he is, and then it's almost like it's the quick
it's necessary for like plot reasons, I think, because with Hedwig you're like, oh god, like people can actually die now, I feel like the Hedwig death was like a stepping point into the maturity that the Harry Potter books became with the like. So,
point. I mean,
so not necessarily a hero's death, but if it was to be like the best death, the best of uses of death as a plot device, like
it's like a tone, like a milestone thing.
Yeah. Okay, notch on the bedpost, just in the most awful way.
Pretty much. To be fair, after coming off the back of like Dumbledore dying in the sixth book, and you're like, right. Whew. They just kick you off straight away, don't they?
Yeah.
Bless her. And I think as well, that is more a thing of, like, that is his kind of innocence gone, especially with that book and film, is, like, he doesn't go back to Hogwarts after that, you know? Like, Hedwig is his last connection to his entry into the wizarding world, you know? Like,
It's like the first book. It's like the sense of innocence, or like symbol of innocence kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think for me, though, like, in the Harry Potter world, I think Snape is probably my favorite. But again, like you say, it isn't a hero's death, like, in and of itself. But I think what really, like, brings it home for me is, like, that I love a good, like, I mean, I know it sounds mean, but I love a good tragedy. And his is one of those ones where it's like the death becomes like the catalyst for this whole thing. And then like it's the moment that you switch on him, which I find is like it's a really impressive thing to do with something like a death. You know what I mean?
It's like mythological.
Yeah. It's like Vader-esque in that way where like you were the villain up until this point, and then now you're like, oh wait, you were almost a victim really this whole time.
Yeah, no, you're right. His whole story is tragic. If you think he just loved Lily and Lily died, and then he just dedicates his whole life to basically bringing down the person who killed his wife, just to eventually not even see his downfall. You know, to die before he even
before he could see it through.
Mm.
I remember you. I think you even said on you remember when we did the Harry Potter rankings. I think when you were bigging up Snape, you were like, yeah, literally, the only reason that Voldemort loses is because he kills Lily and Snape decides it's over, which is so true.
Snape, because it's literally him. Mate, and he's like,
yeah, exactly.
it's on. Oh, yeah. It's on. And he just dedicates the next 20 years of his life to just fucking up Voldemort. Eventually, when he comes back, you know, he's just waiting.
Right? Trust me.
Mm.
Yeah. Had the foresight to come back as well.
It's nice to have such a. I think maybe because it spans over seven films and eight films, seven books, and years of production and stuff, so that it's quite easy for them deaths to be heroic and whatnot. I think what's more impressive is when you've only got an hour and a half to introduce me to a character, make me feel for that character, and then rip my heart out by killing that character. Mm. So as much as Harry Potter is amazing for hero's death, and there's a lot of examples for it, I do feel like it was very easy for them to do that because they've had so long to build up characters. This is like we were saying before with Sirius, like he doesn't really have a hero's death. I mean, he's only in two films, three. He makes a slight appearance in Goblet of Fire, but he's not.
Yeah, and
really
like he appears in like ghost form and shit.
Yeah, in the flames or something.
Right. But that story is so. I don't know, because it's so long. Like he can be added halfway through and just taken away. You know.
Yeah. Mm. And Gary Oldman brought that home for everyone.
What Harry Potter offers a lot through the wars is the warrior's death, and we briefly talked about that with Boromir as well. One of those for me is Logan, and like now I've got my X-Men where it ends at Days of Future Past and then Logan, and it's a beautiful package. It's almost perfect, and Logan preserves that. In dying, like it required in order to put the full stop and have this what became a crazy convoluted universe of and the films kind of diminished as it went on. Logan just had an opportunity for a full stop, Logan had to die for that whole franchise for me to love it like I do. But also like the way they do it is just perfection. It's philosophical. It asks questions of life and
is something else on a whole as
trust
well.
Me. Yeah, it's the perfect. It's like the whole film is essentially about his death. The whole tone, he's not making it out of the film alive. You're seeing. I don't know, his redemption story or something. It's like it's almost kind of biblical in that sense. My favorite shot of the whole film though is when she knocks the cross over to an X.
Really?
Yeah, because like that just that is the full stop on the series. That's just like perfection. Just that little, just changing the, obviously the cross that's usually on a gravestone, to the X. Yeah, there's so much to talk about, because it quite literally is a sacrifice.
You know, my favorite bit is actually like the beginning of that, like this, like, because the bit, my favorite bit is when you know, when you hear his like roar in the forest and you see him running in. That's my favorite. Yeah, that's my favorite shot, and that's that's like the beginning bit when he's like, he accepts. Essentially, he makes the decision to give up his life, and it's from then that like almost the death. Well, the death scene starts at the very least. You know what I mean? It's like from then on, you're like, okay, he's now on borrowed time.
Yeah.
This is what I like about it as well. Is like, even, I don't really know too much. You'll have to clue me up here. So like, on X-Men lore and whatnot. But like, I was always led to believe that Wolverine pretty much can't die. You know, like.
Well, this, how they kind of explain it in the comics is like he has, you know, in theory he wouldn't die normally, but because he has the adamantium, the metal is like irradiated and shit because like, you know, he was in Japan and all that stuff. So it's like his healing factor is constantly working. So normally if like that didn't happen, he could have lived in theory forever. But because his healing factor is like constantly in use, it's started to age him.
He's essentially rusting.
Yeah, it's like he has to run at full throttle just to kind of survive.
Okay. I guess he's like ridiculously heavy as well. That's never really addressed. Although I do.
You see, I think there's like a couple little jokes they do. You know what I mean?
Okay. Yeah. I love the, we'll lead on to one of yours, Solo.
Well, mine's it's kind of funny that mine and yours are quite similar in that way. I guess, and actually the same with, if you include Harry Potter in like the building of backstory for this death. Like, you know, for Logan, we had all of the X-Men movies, you know, we had the Harry Potter franchise. But my one is for Spock, which, you know, I think this is like the second or third time I brought this film up. But who's counting?
Won't be the last.
Yeah, exactly.
I wonder what's got the higher count, this or Ang Lee's Hulk. I think it might be Hulk.
Ooh. It's close. I bet it's probably very fucking close. But in the case of this, it's like you had the whole. The Star Trek, the original series, where, you know, you meet the crew, you meet the ship, you meet the world, essentially, because this, you know, as is in the title, the original series. And Spock really was the, like, he, despite being, like, the emotionless, what the quote-unquote, like, emotionless character, he was the heart of the show.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, he was, like, the one that people kind of, on the whole, people could sympathize with him better than they could with like Kirk, who was like always the winner, if you know what I mean. And then like, I think that's why the sacrifice is so good for him to do it in this film. It really brings that home.
Yeah, I always felt like it wasn't like Spock was lacking empathy. He just had a much deeper view on it.
That's kind of
like babies to how his thought process is.
I know that's kind of, but that's kind of the beauty of that character.
Yeah,
is that because like his people, the Vulcans, are like, they see him as like an emotional guy, but all of the humans are like, oh well, he's a Vulcan because he act like, you know, that's just the culture he's a part of.
Yeah,
but it's like. He does have the emotions, yeah. and his death scene is one of the ones where you really see it, because it's like,
is that the one we watched for Did you put that in top five death scenes? Is that the one where he shuts the door?
Yeah. Yeah, I think I put it as my number one.
Yeah, yeah, it went against...
The horse.
The horse. I remember that now.
But it's like it gets of those ones that gets me every time. But like much the same as Logan does. But it's just that moment when because there's this thing in Star Trek which is like a famous thing in Star Trek that Kirk is the only person who's ever been able to beat this test at the Starfleet Academy called the Kobayashi Maru, and how he beats it is he reprograms it. So essentially Kirk beats it because he cheats, but he's the only one that ever cheated, and so it's, everyone's kind of like, well, he beat it by cheating. Yeah. And it's like the no-win scenario. And so, yeah, it's like the whole test is like, how do you react to the no-win scenario? And so Kirk the wins. Situation they're placed in, yeah, he wins by cheating. And they do it a lot in the. I think they meant. Yeah, they actually mentioned the film starts actually with a new recruit doing the test, and like everyone dies, and then Kirk comes in. He's like, "Oh, well, I guess you lost." Like it's all pompous and shit, as Kirk is because it's fucking Shatner. But then
they did that in the 2009 remake as well.
Yeah. Yeah, you do. Yeah, and you see how he does it, and it's just like he's reprogrammed it, and everyone's just like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, and anyways, where I was kind of going with that is Spock has this line that he says to Kirk where he's like, oh, what? Because he's everyone at the Academy takes it, but Spock never took it because he, like, didn't go to the, like, he just, because he was so good, went through the ranks higher and never did the test. So he has this line where he's like, you know, I never took the, what do you think of my solution? So because they were placed in a scenario essentially where the ship couldn't escape and they were about to get caught in an explosion and they were just kind of limping away knowing that, you know, it's the classic thing where it's like they're trying to escape knowing they can't escape in the situation they're in. And so Spock goes into the engine room and like, basically, he sacrifices himself to like fix the engine or fix the warp drive, and they shoot off. And essentially, he presents this scenario where he was like in the no win scenario. Mm-hmm. My choice was, I had to give up my own life to win.
It's funny that how closely it fits with Sam's next one, to be honest, but. The actual sacrifice that's not necessarily like I'm doing it for the war. It's on a personal level because it's like the love between Kirk and Spock. Yeah.
No, what really brings it home, I think, is because the film, like that's in Star Trek II, the Wrath of Khan, but then Star Trek III is the search for Spock, and essentially it's just like you're just watching. You pick up with the crew and they're in mourning the entire film is basically about how do they react to the death of their best friend, and they find out that there's a chance that they can save him, and so like they run off like because it's just a crazy story about like if essentially they're presented with the circumstances that there's a 1 in a million chance that they could save Spock. And so they're like, well, we're going to give up everything because he gave up everything for us. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah. I think the third one might be my favorite, at least at the minute.
Okay.
Yeah. But favorites change.
Yeah. So, yeah, that is an interesting one with that is you do get that, the repercussions of it. Like, again, sort of like with Endgame, Sam.
Spilling over nicely.
Yeah. Yeah, for real. Just a sad death in general, really. Like, just didn't know why. I think as well, like, what did Black Widow's death for me was also seeing Hulk React.
Oh yeah.
Come on. Yeah.
Like when it obviously so, when Hawkeye comes back and you know yeah. he's not there, it's
they should have done brutal. They should have done a bit scene of someone fishing the bench out of the lake.
Yeah.
I think there were blatantly a lot of benches in that lake by the end of that day, mate.
Oh, I think that oh, that's so true actually. Yeah, there wasn't a lake.
Yeah. They needed a dab.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Yeah, no, so yeah, Black Widow's death. Well, the film's been out long enough now, it's not a spoiler. I don't care anymore.
Yeah, it made enough money.
It did, yeah. Also, the biggest tragedy is that, you know, she gets her film announced and dies. So now it's just a prequel. It's kind of sad.
Yeah, and then 2020 took it even further. It's now this year.
Exactly. But yeah, I think just purely, I think the scene between her and Hawkeye, when they're both just desperate to be the one to kind of sacrifice themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But mm-hmm. there's also this conflict of interest when it
causes him enough stress.
And I had to stop myself from saying it. I'm glad you said it. shout out AC. Just them two fighting, and you know, like I think one of my favorite things is when Black Widow's like running to do it, and he just shoots that explosive arrow and just like knocks her off her feet, and he's like, yeah, nah, it's gonna be me. Then he goes running, and then it's just peak, man. Mm. Like it's to the point as well, like. Imagine when they're both hanging that he just lets go as well and they both just die. You know what I mean? Like
Red Skull's just like, yes, mate! Get me in that pool.
Buzzing. Yeah, that's the thing. I think it's so sad that she kind of has to die, and it's sad that like they go together in a way. Mm. Because I don't really want to see either of them die. Fuck with Hawkeye a lot.
After Endgame, I do. It was a joke before them. Yeah, he stripes in Endgame.
He did.
See, I've always struggled with him just because I've always been Team Kate Bishop, even though she hasn't been in the films yet. But okay. It's like I've just been waiting for him to leave so she'll arrive.
Is that his daughter?
No, they're not related.
Oh, okay, I had a feeling his daughter was gonna. Take over. Take the bow.
Pass the quiver.
Yeah. So yeah, I think the death is like hugely impactful, and like but as you were explaining it, I do remember after he blew her up with a bow, and he just running and just looks past her like. So like legitimately in his mind that was goodbye for her to whip it away from him and leave him dangling and then to her to do that in reverse. It packs a punch. And and then when you get that moment with Hulk, damn. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think in that moment, I mean, you realise what's gonna happen, you know, and it's just like you then, as an audience, you've got to sit there and be like, right, who do I want to die the least out of these two characters? Like,
And we, as an audience, we kind of already decided it was going to be one of them as well. You know, we knew walking in, we were going to get probably Black Widow or Hawkeye was going to bite it. Yes.
Yeah, that's true.
You know what, though? I'm glad it was them two as a duo. And not Thor and Rocket.
Future potential of the franchise, you don't touch them right now.
That'll be like a scene in the new Deadpool film or something.
Yeah.
That's interesting. To be fair, should we just talk on that a quick second? Like Deadpool 3, it's going to be R-rated, isn't it, and part of the MCU.
I think it'll be part of the MCU in regards that it will never like affect anything in the MCU. It'll be a very self-contained film and almost kind of a parody of... It'll probably be a parody of the 5-year gap or something like that. You know, something in that realm.
I
don't think anything R-rated will actually affect anything that's Spider-Man or the likes that's aimed at a younger audience. I think it literally will. But I think there's a lot of potential for a lot of fun in a post Thanos MCU world with Deadpool. Although
imagine Solo he just might not agree. The new Spider-Man and beheads Doc Ock.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. I'm sure now he's kind of. I imagine by the time it comes out, he'll sort of have a multiverse to play with as well.
So yeah, probably.
There'll be a lot going on. If Cable returns, then like there's
all. That'll be interesting just for Josh Brolin to reprise the role.
And that will get mentioned probably to death. It'd be really interesting to see how they do if they do any X-Men stuff. So obviously,
fingers crossed.
If we're making the other Deadpool films MCU canon, there's a mansion, like that's interesting. As though they've always been there, and they get called out for missions and stuff. X-Men could literally be just like, oh yeah, they were always there. They were just like a ground force, like the Defenders sort of thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. Mad tangent.
Yeah. So, what other examples do you man have?
Sure. So, kind of again with a sacrifice and a dramatic death? Are both you man seen One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest?
I have. Off your recommendation.
Yeah.
Did you? What did you think of it?
I enjoyed it. I watched it after we did.
I think it was the fist pumps.
Which podcast was it? Yeah. The fist pumps. Knowing what I knew, it didn't have as big of an effect on me and whatnot. But at the same time, Rogan's enthusiasm for that scene made me feel a certain way watching it, kind of thing. So I know it means a lot, and it kind of made me appreciate it more, I think, because I know that it's kind of, you know, I mean, it's touched one of my friends, kind of thing.
Oh, bless.
Like, I always find that with films, like if someone recommends me a film, and I, you know, when they're proper passionate about it, especially just a certain scene, and they're like, yeah, it makes me feel like this and whatnot, like, yeah, that's special, isn't it? Like, I like that. I really enjoyed that. And maybe it'd have had like more of a heart ripping effect on me if I didn't know what was going to go on. But at the same time, like, it is a massive film. I'm pretty sure I've heard the ending before. Chat to Rogue, maybe even just in pop culture, you know, it's like quite a.
Well, have you seen It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia?
I've seen a lot of random episodes. I've never sat through it, kind of.
Okay, they do a parody of it because, like, Danny DeVito is actually in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and so like do an episode where he's back, like, just for a day, he's living that life again. it's good, that episode.
There's a couple of good actors in there. Christopher Lloyd's in there, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good in that.
Yeah, go ahead, Rogan. Explain for the people who.
Yeah, so. If you haven't seen the film, Jack Nicholson plays, you know, he's a bit of a scumbag, really. And he manages to get in a bit of a mental hospital for an easy time. He gets them all gambling and stuff. And he just like puts a whole new lease of life into this system. That's awful. Well, eventually he gets lobotomized for it, for his efforts. Which is kind of devastating. And he brought this sort of huge Native American guy out of his shell, sort of, throughout it, you know, it's a touching story with all these characters. But there's one in particular called Chief, rather inappropriately, I should add. But yeah, that was his name in the film. He had this, he used to tell people that he would lift the sink and throw it through the window, and that's how they would escape. Well, when they planned to escape, obviously he comes back and he'd been lobotomized. And Chief, you know, sort of puts him out of his misery, really. It's a hero sacrifice to the point that his friend isn't there anymore. So he's sort of letting him free. And then he goes and he lifts the sink up, which is like an impossible task, throws it through the window and runs for his freedom. Yeah, it's really touching. Because of the film is centered around the human nature, really. So you're learning that through like vulnerable people, with Jack Nicholson's kind of, you know, kind of scumbag character, where he is kind of taking advantage of them, but at the same time, he's giving them something to do, you know.
They really show you what those hospitals were like at the time, because a lot of, like, you know, especially with like the staff and shit. Like, I can't remember the nurse's name.
Nurse Ratchet.
But, you know, yeah, and like, what do you know how she treats the kid? And then, I guess. It,
is it okay awful. To spoil?
Well, oh no, wait, you've seen it, Sam. But yeah, when you know how that, like, they were like, it makes Nicholson and Chief the hero more when you see what. Not only the kind of lease on life they're giving to the other patients, but what they're escaping from.
Yeah.
Hasn't she got her own Netflix series now?
Yeah. Called Ratched. What it's,
yeah. Is it any, has anyone checked it out? Is it any good?
What is it?
My sister watched it. It's like Ratched, but I think her name is like, I don't know if her name is Ratchet with a T, but this is with a D. But yeah. Or maybe Ratchet is spelled like that. But yeah.
The same character?
Yeah, it's a it's like her origin story.
Oh wow! Yeah, I didn't even know that was out.
My sister's.
I've seen stills of it. It looks really well shot. Like, it looks really, really pretty.
Yeah, I believe it's going to be good. I don't like to watch it because, like, I don't know. It's like a perfect kind of film in itself. I don't really want to.
Yeah, it's a weird one to do like a spin-off from.
Yeah, I don't need to know Nurse Ratched's backstory. I've never really thought about that.
Yeah. I just thought she was a bitch.
Yeah.
A real bitch.
So that's my dramatic one. I sort of picked a warrior's death, and a very dramatic one that kind of affected me. Didn't say it, but I will do quickly this Yondu as well, which was a great warrior's death. Similar vein to Snape, where, like, you find out that, like, he genuinely was Quill's dad at the point of his death.
Yeah.
And then he got his send off in the end.
So the last one I did is that, oh, actually, funnily enough, I guess this brings us kind of full circle, because this is a childhood film.
Great.
The Iron Giant.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Animated movie classic. Oh, I
forgot you was going to talk about that.
Yeah, man.
When you brought it up, I was like, this film isn't remembered enough.
I know. It's incredible that. It's like, it's one of those films that, like, I don't know a person that has seen that doesn't say it's like, I mean, I'm not going to lie, like, I'm just getting a bit choked up talking about it. But, like,
yeah, man.
Like, it's so
innocent.
Exactly. It's like, you know what it is? It's like that kind of, like, classic American movie trope of, like, the boy and their dog.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Except it's absolutely the boy and his giant robot.
Yeah.
That's actually, like
giant is an understatement.
Yeah. Exactly.
Miffle
high.
You know what? Now you're saying it, though, like, I might have said Star Wars, but, like, and we were saying about Mufasa earlier and stuff. The Iron Giant could potentially be the first time I properly dealt with death in a film. Now I think about it, I watched that young, very young.
Yeah, like, it's a very, like, striking one as well. You know what I mean?
Trust me.
It's hard to deal with. Yeah. And yeah. I think it's like in the way you were saying how they encapsulate that innocent love between a dog and a child with a 50-foot robot, but it doesn't really matter.
It doesn't rely on the giant. The story isn't really about the fact that there's a giant robot, if you know what I mean. Because it's like, that movie, The Iron Giant, it's not about the giant. But I mean, like, the kind of themes and stuff in it are very much what, like, generates this emotion. Like, what is what this death is building to. Because, you know, they have the whole, like, when he first shows him the comics and he shows him Superman and there's the, like, murder robot. And they kind of go through this whole thing of, like, the choice between good and evil. And it even comes right, you know, when the Iron Giant goes crazy, attacks all the military guys. And he does have to make the choice of, like, do you choose to be, like, when you have the power? Like, it's the classic, it's like what Spider-Man's been telling us since the 60s. With great power comes great responsibility. And the film is essentially about the presentation of that choice to a blank. Actually, you know what? It kind of goes back to, like, what I was saying about, do you remember when we were talking about Frankenstein before, like just a couple episodes back?
Yeah, the horror one, yeah.
Yeah, and how it's like the blank slate, so all that it becomes a reflection of what it sees. So the giant has to choose to reflect either, like, the military and people that are, like, choosing to hunt it and treat it like a monster, or it can choose to be the side of it that's, like, and reflect how the boy sees it and how it's like you can be the hero. And the giant, and, like, it makes that choice when, like, the nuke is about to land on the town. He decides to fly up and he has he has two great last lines, because he has the one with him and Hogarth when he's like, no, you stay, I go, and he flies up. And then he even has the moment where he's like, ah, Superman. And, like, it just goes out with the, like, aww. It really epitomizes that, like, decision to be the hero. And not just, like, to kind of accept everything that entails. Like, if you're going to be the hero, you have to fucking put your money where your mouth is. And this movie, this character really does in that moment where it's like, this boy, this town, and just, like, this life that is here on the whole is worth his to sacrifice. Like, very similar to the kind of thing I was saying with Spock, how it's like, what is, it's the classic choice of the good of the many outweighs. I mean, oh, actually, that's even the conversation that Hip, Spock, and Kirk have. Just to go back, is the good of the many outweighs the need of the few, or the one, and they both choose to make that sacrifice, and it's fucking powerful. Like, I'm getting emotional just thinking about it. Like,
I just checked; it was directed by Brad Bird. You know. Who did The Incredibles.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that's pretty sweet.
Yeah. It's a banger.
Yeah, really is. But it's a great one to end the show on. And if anybody hasn't seen it, I think above all the films, I'd say Iron Giant, because, well, it needs to be remembered. It's great.
And you're guaranteed to enjoy it as well.
Yeah.
Like, or at least I think you are.
I'd agree.
You know what, weirdly enough as well, one thing with the Iron Giant is, do you know in Ready Player One, where he gets his cameo? I remember seeing that in the trailer. That is the thing that got me the most gassed and the most hyped. I saw it. I was like, that's the Iron Giant. I was like, nah, I'm watching this film. I don't care about anything else now.
It gets a bit of screen time as well, right? Because isn't it? Hey, Chu has the Iron Giant.
Mm.
Oh, mad.
Which, yeah, it's incredible.
But it doesn't get enough love. That stuff cemented, man. Especially with, I think, what year was it released?
99. It's like in that sort of the last of the golden age of animation, you know, before it all went 3D. There's like there's a few bangers.
Yeah, it's very beautiful. That. Like art style wise.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, great. Well, that's been the show. We've talked through warriors' deaths. We've talked through sacrificial deaths. We've talked through what deaths mean and how it can be used as a plot device. And then just how it can just tear your heart out. I mean, what we haven't really discussed, and I don't have an example, so it's probably stupid for me to bring it up, but like, is when hero deaths haven't worked. Because that would be quite interesting as well. But it's just like, but the filmmakers have clearly tried to make a big impact with the death, and it's flopped. I know there's some examples of that, but anyway, I digress.
Kylo Ren.
Oh, just before the end, so just before the end, I've done some spoken poetry, and I want to preview one on the show. I've got 7 written. I'm only going to do one now. But if you mind, could pick what between 1 and 7 for me.
Do you want to guess, Sam? Because I've picked twice already.
I'm going to go 4 because that's my lucky number. So
4.
Perfect.
Okay. This is called A Word Called Love. I think it's time we talked about a word called love. Is it overused or simply misunderstood? See, I'm trying to decipher the language that we're built in because I want to express the right amount of love to my children. When does love equal love, not lust, greed or vanity, envy, sloth or gluttony? At which point does love become a sin, to miss a mark, to not hit the feeling that I'm in? See, there's love I feel that's unconditional, but then there's that's more material. It seems to be used too much over and above. I think it's about time we talked about a word called love.
Nice.
Yeah.
And you picked the perfect number there, Sam, because I picked 3 and 5 off air.
Yeah.
Really? that was incredible. I just wanted to bring that up because that blew. Yeah. Well, that was sick, Rogan.
Yeah,
that was sick. Was it in that one? Because you sent me a couple of these the other day.
I've rewritten them since.
Yeah, I don't know if it was in that one, but you had a line that actually stuck with me that I think you've removed. You were comparing how you can say you love your kid, but at the same time love
ice cream.
Let's say ice cream. That's the one.
Yeah.
I was gonna say chips, but I couldn't remember what it was. Yeah.
Okay.
And it was like you use the same word, but realistically.
Yeah,
that's saving your kids or a bowl of ice cream, then you know what I mean.
It's not comparable, is it? Like, you're not going to overpay with ice cream, you're not,
no.
Like, your kids, it's not even that, it's not a question of how much they cost.
Yeah, I'm saying.
Maybe I should look at adding something like that back into it. It was just,
maybe
it went off,
one, but save it for another, save it,
yeah,
so write it down,
yeah, put that one,
it,
yeah, keep a note.
It went off the flow, good. You know, so. I kind of, when I tighten them up. But yeah, are you still okay to help me film these?
I will happily help you, my friend. We just need to arrange a date off air.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Shit.
Anyway,
I'll
wrap this up. So thank you, everybody, for watching. God bless you. We love you. You're fucking amazing. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, everybody.
Good luck and
watch
good night.
Iron Giant.
Big ups.
Trust me.
Watch the Iron Giant.